Support for Southbound comes from WFAE members and Southeast Radiation Oncology Group, offering non-invasive alternatives to surgery and treatments in radiation oncology. Details at treatcancer.com.
Like, my mom, when she came to visit, first morning, she got up. We have this big coffee ceremony in the morning. So she woke me up and she's like, okay, tell your neighbors coffee is ready so that they can have coffee with us. I'm like, Mom, no, we don't work like that here.
That's Johanna Solomon. She had to learn a different way of living when she immigrated to America 20 years ago. She took political asylum here, as her home country of Ethiopia was in the middle of a war. Eventually, she landed in Atlanta. And now, she brings the whole world to a Southern supper table. Hey, y'all, I'm Tommy Tomlinson. And from WFAE in Charlotte, this is Southbound. 2 years ago, Johanna and her friend Amanda Plum started Chow Club Atlanta, a rotating dinner club featuring meals from around the world. Now the Chow Club has hundreds of people who come to their events every month. It's all part of Johanna's belief that we're all more alike than different, and that one of the best ways to show it is when we sit down to eat. Here's our conversation. We want to talk mostly about the types of food from around the world that you have brought people together to eat in the South. But I want to sort of start by talking about that from the other end. Now that you've been in the South for a while, what Southern foods have you come to love?
Well, Southern food to me is about comfort food. And being an immigrant from Ethiopia, I fit in right at home because food is comfort. Food is how you show people you love them and you care about them. So my favorite dish is mac and cheese. It's a, like a foreign concept because we don't have that growing up, but it's I love it. Like the cheese is gooey, it's warm and nice, and yeah, it's my favorite thing.
Now, when you say you didn't have mac and cheese growing up, do you mean you didn't have mac and or cheese, or just that combination?
That combination. Uh-huh. Like my parents are from Eritrea, so Eritrea has been colonized by the Italian government, so some of their dishes reflect traditional Italian dish. So we grew up eating spaghetti, lasagna, but mac and cheese is such a unique concept. So it was a nice surprise and one of my favorite dishes in the South.
And not only that, in the South it counts as a vegetable.
Okay.
Well, if you go to your typical Southern diner, right, mac and cheese counts as a vegetable. You know, that's one of our things. So
That's true. It comes like a side dish, right?
Right. Well, as other parts of the country, it's sort of considered like a main dish, like the thing that would be the centerpiece. But here, it's a side dish, very beloved, but a side dish. So I wanted to ask about, you know, how long have you lived in Atlanta in the South now?
In the South, 12 years.
Okay, and how does it compare to where you grew up?
There is that sense of community that I love, and I feel like people seem more open to learn about other cultures. I'm talking about my experience in Atlanta, Georgia in general. So
in different parts of the South, that can certainly be different.
Yes, and I love the diversity we have right now, like everybody from everywhere lives in Atlanta.
Yeah. And how did you end up coming here?
Well, I lived in Santa Monica in California for 9 years before I moved to Georgia. So it's only me and my sister that live in the state. So my parents advised us it would be better if both of us are on the same place. And me being the older and who always have to sacrifice, I moved to Georgia to be with my sister.
And your sister moved for like work or something? Or
no, it's like when we escaped the Civil War.
Right.
So I happened to land in California and she ended up here.
Oh, I see. You ended up in two different places, and then you came to live with her. I see.
Yes.
So what was, you said you escaped. Do you mean that in sort of a literal sense, like you had to kind of sneak out of the country? What was that like?
So what happened is there was a civil war between Ethiopia and Eritrea. And my parents are originally from Eritrea, but I was born and raised at my siblings in Ethiopia. So during that conflict, the Ethiopian government decided to deport Eritreans from Ethiopia to Eritrea, and which is like, I'm like, this is home. Like, I don't know what I would do in Eritrea. Like, I don't know anybody there. So my parents have to pay for me to escape, because if I go to Eritrea, I have to serve national service, which means I have to go to war and fight Ethiopians, like, which are my brothers and sisters. So we found a guy who hires people to work in the States. So we got our visa through him, and I came here. Mm-hmm. So I was in a political asylum because I could never go back home. I just got my citizenship last year, so I'm happy about that. Now I'm able to go and see my family.
And what was it like for you when you first arrived in California?
I was coming more from gratitude, because I don't have to fear for my life anymore. You know, like, yes, it's like a different culture, different language, but the safety aspect of it outweighs what would be the obstacle that would be waiting for me here. So, everything is different, but one thing I would say, I truly believe when they say it's a land of opportunity. Like, if you put your mind into it, you can accomplish anything here.
And was there a big Ethiopian community in California, and then was there one in Georgia when you arrived there?
No, I didn't know anybody when I arrived in California. Like, I was literally by myself. So it took me, I would say, maybe 2 years to discover, like, a small community where I used to live at. Because my situation, for a short time, I was an illegal immigrant because my visa expired and I didn't have the means to go seek, help. So I was scared to socialize with a lot of people because I don't know who would, you're kind of paranoid because you don't know how this will turn out. But there are a few in LA, and then a large community, especially in Clarkston, like Ethiopian community now.
Clarkston, Georgia, right? That's
yes.
It's sort of my understanding is it's sort of a kind of a melting pot for people from all over the world there.
It's beautiful, yes. Everybody from everywhere lives there.
Yeah. And were you able to kind of bring it to the food part of it? Were you able to find the kind of things that you grew up on, the food you missed from back home, the ingredients? Were those easy to find, or were they hard to track down?
Right now, they're very easy to find. There are markets, especially in Clarkston, Georgia, where you can get injera and all the spices. So they're easy to find. But when I moved here, my mom will wait till she finds somebody who comes to the States and she will ship it to me. But now, it's easy to find.
Yeah, yeah. And so, and you said your mom was, I guess, is your mom and the rest of your family still back in Ethiopia?
Yes, they're back. They had to escape to Kenya. But once everything settled down, they went back to Ethiopia, so they're okay now.
And is it possible for you to go back, or is it because of the situation?
Right now I can, because I'm a citizen, American citizen. But before, it was a political asylum. Unless you have change in the government, you cannot go back home, because it's a safety issue at that point.
Right.
But now, I have an 8-year-old, she's never been back home. So I'm hoping to take her to visit sometime next year.
Yeah. It seems to me, I've obviously never been in that situation, but it would seem to me that things like food from home or something that reminds you of that would bring a tremendous comfort in those times that are more tense.
Yes. And also food created a job for me because I worked for Starbucks for 10 years. I was managing few stores. And, you know, I was tired of it and I was looking for something. But again, it's a different country, so you don't know where to start. And one thing I know I was good at was cooking and feeding people. So I got involved with this event. It's called Atlanta Underground Market. And what it does is it features people that are starting in the food business. And, you know, the first time I participated as a vendor, I sold out. It was great feedback. Then I took over and started managing it. And one thing I found out was the immigrants come to this country and most of us are not looking for handout. Like, we need an opportunity, right? And there is a language barrier and, like, you don't know how much money you need to start anything. But what you know is, like, you can cook and feed people. So by creating those opportunity, we're giving them, like the confidence, you know, like, do what you love to do and then make a living out of it.
Right.
Does
right.
that make sense?
It does. And what do you remember what you made that first time you were at the Underground?
Yes. So I made 4 vegan dishes, like misirwet, kikwet, which is yellow lentil, gomen, which is collard greens, and alicha, which is cabbage. And it was all vegan. I didn't think there was such a demand. For us, it's part of our cuisine. But there was such a high demand for vegan food. Like, I sold out, like, in a heartbeat. So some of them have never heard of Ethiopian food before. Some have, but, you know, didn't know where to try it. So it was a great opportunity.
I know this is a big thing to try to ask, but can you sort of describe Ethiopian cuisine? Me, from the outside, not knowing much about it, having eaten it a few times, I know there's this culture of sharing with the bread and that sort of thing, but I don't really know what the main ingredients are or sort of what the sort of culture brings to it.
All right. One thing I would say, it's very communal. Like, you don't eat by yourself. It's crazy. Like, growing up, you wait for till everybody gets home to eat. You rarely see people eating by themselves. So it's that's when you discuss things and come up with the plan and talk about your dates, you know, through eating. So most of the dishes, if you have noticed, I don't know if you have seen a picture of even what Ethiopian dish looks like. It comes with 4, 5, 6 items in one big platter.
Right.
So because 4, 5, 6 people are sitting and eating with you. And most of our dishes tend to lean heavily on vegan and gluten-free options. So let's say 4 items we'll have on a big platter. One will be meat. The rest would be vegan items. So the main ingredients in our cooking is a spice called berbere, B-E-R-B-R-E.
Yeah.
B-E-R-B-R-E. And it's a combination of 7 spices. So we use that to cook most of our dishes. And the other unique thing we have is the injera, which is made out of teff, T-E-F-F flour. And it's ferment, so it has that sour taste.
And it's sort of spongy, right?
Yeah, spongy, yeah. And think of that tortilla. So you tear a piece of the injera and you scoop the sauces to eat it with.
You know, that communal meal that you mentioned is something that I think here in America used to be sort of the default way that people ate. You know, family, you wait till dad and mom come home from work. You know, you get together, everybody sits at the same table. And now that seems to be not so much the tradition anymore. People just kind of eat when they can. In Ethiopia, is that still a big part of the culture to have that communal meal?
Definitely. Like, my mom, when she came to visit, first morning, she got up. We have this big coffee ceremony in the morning. So she woke me up and she's like, okay, tell your neighbors coffee is ready so that they can have coffee with us. I'm like, Mom, no, we don't work like that here. You don't knock at people's house and have, you know, ask them to come over. She just could not believe it, like how I'm not walking around inviting people to have coffee, right?
I think her way is better.
It is better, but I wish it was like that, you know? And I don't believe people don't want to do it. It's just like our schedule, our lifestyle is so crazy that we don't get the opportunity to do it.
When we come back, Johanna Solomon talks about her favorite Chow Club Atlanta meals. One of them involved her mom. That and more ahead on Southbound.
Support for Southbound comes from WFAE members and Southeast Radiation Oncology Group, offering non-invasive alternatives to surgery and treatments in radiation oncology. Details at treatcancer.com.
Each week on Southbound, we take a moment to highlight our listeners. This week, I want to thank Mark Woods, a fine newspaper columnist and author from down in Jacksonville. Here's what Mark said on Twitter about my last podcast with sports writer Chuck Culpepper. Two familiar voices creating one of my favorite Southbound episodes yet. As a Liverpool supporter, especially like the Mo Salah anecdote and the Kentucky stories, and Chuck still remembering every score ever. Thank you, Mark, and thanks to everyone else who shared and commented on that episode. If you'd like to be a part of the Southbound community, we'd love to hear from you. You can suggest ideas for future guests on our homepage at wfae.org/southbound. You can also reach me directly at ttomlinson@wfae.org or tweet at me at Tommy Tomlinson. What really helps is if you leave us a good rating and review on Apple Podcasts or the NPR One app. That helps Southbound get out there to even more listeners. Thanks for all your support. Now, back to our conversation with Johanna Solomon. And so you cooked for the underground meals, and then you managed that for a while?
Yes, managed that for 5 years.
And then how did that evolve into Chow Club?
Chow Club. So Amanda was the co-founder of Chow Club. She used to come to the underground market, and we made, you know, we connected, and a great friendship came out of that. So she used to help me, like, marketing, because I was managing, like, 30 vendors, and I had about 12,000 members on my email list.
Wow.
Yes. So... and Amanda is so used to hosting events at her house. So one day she asked me, like, hey, Johanna, so a group of us want to go out and eat at a great Ethiopian restaurant. Like, what is your recommendation? So I jokingly said, my house.
Best Ethiopian place in town.
Exactly. So she invited, you know, those group of friends, and I cooked at her house. And she charged them, like, I don't remember the amount. And everybody paid. And it was such a great experience. And then we tried it again. I made traditional Ethiopian breakfast. And we sold out very fast. And both of us were like, okay, there is something here. Because I have 30 vendors from all walks of life that need an opportunity. And you are good at hosting and organizing these things. So... we teamed up and we started Chow Club Atlanta.
And how many people do you have now on that mailing list?
So we still utilize the underground market email list. So we have 11,000. And then for Chow Club, we have close to 3,000 now. So
wow.
I would say maybe 14,000 email members, like, on our email list.
And explain sort of how that format works. Is it... is a meal every month? Is that how it?
Yes. So we started with one night a month. So what we do is we will find a chef, and our requirement is whatever dish they prepare has to be authentic, and dishes that you would not find at your local restaurant. So what we want them to do is get in touch with, you know, their roots, like the food I grew up eating, or this is a dish my grandma taught me how to make, and all those things. So these chefs will come up with such an amazing, but, like, unbelievable, like, dishes like you've never heard of. So once we establish the menu, we will send out an email to our members. Okay, this is the chef, let's say Senegal, right? Senegal is our chef for this month, and this is the menu. Purchase your ticket. So we will start selling tickets. The chef's responsibility after submitting the menu is to come with the food the day of the event. We do all the marketing, every logistic thing you can imagine. So the day of, it's a sit-down dinner. It will be like from 3 to 5 course meal. One thing we did was during the travel ban, we teamed up with a Syrian refugee. They just got to this country a few months ago, and I met them through the underground market. So they were so lost. They thought everybody hated them, and like they were so scared for their safety. And so we're like, okay, why don't we have a Syrian dinner? That way we'll give opportunity people to ask questions, you know, and also like for them to express like their feelings and stuff. So we hosted that dinner. It was one of our most successful dinner. There was so much love, and people came together to support them. And the mother cried because she's like, this is not so bad. People like us. Like, she thought everybody didn't want her. So when you see things like that, okay, you know, I'm doing something good. You know, like, this is a need. This is conversation need to happen to bring people together.
I would think that given that you're having people from different countries all the time coming in this sort of multicultural gathering, that there are lots of discussions about immigration, assimilation, all those sorts of things, those things that you guys talk about a lot?
Yes, we do. Well, me being an immigrant too helps, you know. And it's kind of like a bridge between the immigrant community that doesn't know, like, how, because if you look at the media, I mean, you'd be scared to go leave your house, right? So there is that community, and there is the conscious, like, great Americans that are with the cause and want to support their community. So we're like the bridge. We bring them all together to have an open discussion. And the best way to do it is through food, because people are more laid back and more open.
And so what a typical monthly crowd now, what would that be?
Well, we're two nights, Friday and Saturday, we will have 108 attendees both days.
Wow.
Average, yes.
So these folks who are doing the cooking are not just it's not just a family meal. It's a huge undertaking.
Yes. But like most of the people you talk to, the chefs, they see it as they're feeding friends. That's like the first thing that comes to mind. They're like, oh my God, I cook like I'm cooking for my family. You know, like it's a labor of love. And they're the unsung heroes. You know, every dish, it's not to impress. It's truly who they are. And it means so much to them. Like people enjoy their food and, you know, give them feedback and all.
So what were a couple of dishes or a couple of nights maybe that you think of as being especially memorable in the couple of years that y'all have done this?
The Syrian, of course, that's one of my favorite. And the other one is, you know, when my mom cooked. Because it was nice for her to see me, because we haven't seen each other for years because of the war. So she still thinks like, you know, I'm this little kid. And for her to see me doing these dinners and for her to cook and feed all those people, it was a beautiful thing to see. Yeah. Like she was very happy.
And so she was just here visiting for a while?
Visiting, yes. So she was like, hey, I'm coming to visit you for a few months. I'm like, great, you're going to be cooking for Chow Club.
So did she know what that was before she got here?
Yeah, well, you know, my sister talked, you know, told her about the event, and I sent her a video for her to look at. But again, cooking is what she does, right? Feeding is very simple. It's just the environment is what is changing. So
as, you know, you've been doing this for a while, back to the, you know, underground cooking days. Mm-hmm. And so you've worked with a lot of people from a lot of different countries.
Yes.
How do you feel like the climate around immigration and those things. Has it changed at all since you began? Are people more fearful or less fearful? Or how do you feel like things are going now?
I want to say like it's getting better, but I can only speak from my experience. I feel like there is more open conversation, which we never used to have before. And also it depends which part of the country you're coming from. I don't think it's a good time for people from the Middle East.
Right.
You know, and like, you know, our Syrian brothers and sisters, like, I know they will have a different perspective. Like, from my perspective as an Ethiopian immigrant, I think it's better now than it was when I escaped. But one thing I would say, people are more open to talk about it right now. And I truly believe there is a sense of unity now, which we never used to have. You know, like, hopefully I'm right. I feel like we're less divided now within our community.
Right, right. And have you ventured much outside of Atlanta into the South? That yet we mentioned kind of early on that it kind of depends on where you are far as how accommodating things are. Have you run into areas or places where you were surprised in either direction about how things turned out?
Yes, 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 very much so. Well, when you see me, I'm an immigrant. Like, the accent, how I look, there is no hiding it. You know, like, I'm just me. So, and I truly come from a place, oh, my God, look at all these wonderful people. You know, we do events. Me and I have a friend from Antigua who we do, like, festivals. So we were in Dahlonega.
Up in North Georgia.
Yes. So we're setting up. People are giving us looks. We don't understand. We're like, oh, are we doing something wrong? And people refuse to buy food from us. Like, it was such a weird experience. And then she was like, hey, do you think maybe this is because of how we look? I'm like, I don't think so. Like, we cannot be shallow like that. Like, not everybody, you know, thinks like that and all. So... at the end, like, one person came up to us and they were like, so what are you guys doing here? You know, I don't think people are going to buy food from you. And it was an eye-opening, but I still don't want to believe, like, everybody thinks like that there, because I feel like most people are misinformed. And, you know, that was my experience. It was a very strange, strange day, I would say. And the crazy part is it was during the election. So there is that change in the air, like this not good energy going on, you know?
So. I do know. And I that's part of what I was sort of asking around without really asking directly. Do you feel like in the last couple of years things have changed much for you and some of the people you work with in Chow Club?
Right. If you're in the city, I think it's okay. Outside the city, I don't know. I don't know. I'll just leave it like that.
I noticed on the schedule, I don't know if this has already happened or not, you had a Gullah Geechee event.
Yes.
Has that already happened?
It happened last weekend.
And just so for the listeners who might not know, Gullah Geechee culture is a coastal South Carolina, it's coastal Georgia culture that is African roots. And there's a different way of cooking, a different language in some places, sort of a hybridized English. And so how did you connect with those folks?
I thought they just migrated from home, like, recently. Like, the stories she was telling us about how they do, like... she said she knows all the people that sell products, right? So it's a very trust system where, like, let's say I have oranges outside my porch. People will go put money in a box and grab orange. So there is that sense of, like, helping local businesses and everybody knowing each other. That's how it is back home. So when she was telling me that story, I'm like, this is like, we are really not that different from each other. Like, it's just different locations.
And this was somebody you met where?
Here, like the chef from Galagichi.
Oh, okay.
She was telling us this, how she grew up, you know, like how they ate together and, you know, they know the farmer, they know the butcher, they know like the person who provides the vegetable, the farmer, you know. That's how we grew up, like, you know, your local vendors and you support each other. I mean, she sold out so fast when we put out the ticket. People were very happy. The food was amazing. And, yeah, it was a very good experience. And people learned, you know, even within the States, there are places that we never heard of or don't know the culture. Because the perception of, especially to me, when you say America is like, come on, McDonald's, you know, like, the typical. So it's nice to learn about this rich culture that exists that most people don't talk about.
Yeah. So you talked about just then, you know, what you learn at these events. So what do you feel like are some of the things that you learned from doing this?
Conversation is needed. People are willing to learn. There are amazing people in this world. And even though we're all from different parts of the world, we have something in common. Like, we all need that sense of belonging. We all need to feel like that sense of community. And food is our common denominator. Food brings people together. I don't care from which part of the world you are.
Johanna, thank you so much for talking to me. I've had a good time doing this.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
It's a simple idea, really. Sit down with your neighbors over a good meal and learn about one another. And clearly, as Chow Club Atlanta has shown, for some people, that idea has a lot of appeal. But it's also clear that the last thing some other people want in this country is to open themselves up to new people and new cultures and new ideas. Their idea of what it means to be American is meant to keep a lot of people out. But this country has always thrived when we bring new people in. And unless you're Native American, at some point, your family counted as new people here. Johanna Salome came here, saw an opportunity, and went after it. She pursued happiness. It's a classic American story. And it never would have happened if we hadn't let her in. Southbound is a production of WFAE in Charlotte. Our producer is Nick Della Canale. Our web manager is Jessa O'Connor. Our audience engagement manager is Joni Deutsch. And our main theme music comes from Josh Turner. You can listen to this and other episodes of Southbound on the NPR One app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever else you like to listen to podcasts. You can also find Southbound on WFAE.org, where each episode has show notes with more information on that week's guest. See y'all next time. Thanks for listening.
Support for Southbound comes from WFAE members and Southeast Radiation Oncology Group, offering non-invasive alternatives to surgery and treatments in radiation oncology. Details at treatcancer.com. Additional support is provided by the Knight Foundation.